Hello and welcome to Failing Boldly, a podcast that invites people to share stories about failure, resilience, and perseverance. I'm Christian Kuhn, author of the book Failing Boldly and pastor of Urban Village Church in Chicago. My guest for this week's podcast is Jody Winteroff, Senior Vice President for Policy and Political Affairs for Human Rights Campaign. Jody joined HRC after serving as the Chief of Staff in the U.S. Senate and U.S. House of Representatives, as well as Head of Advocacy for CARE, one of the top global leaders in the world that are dedicated to ending poverty. In addition to her work on the Hill, Jody has held several leadership roles on multiple presidential, senatorial, and congressional campaigns, including Hillary Clinton's 2008 presidential campaign. On a personal note, Jody was a college classmate of mine, and I'm grateful that we're friends today. I hope you enjoy it. Well, I am here with Jody Winteroff. Jody, welcome to the podcast, and thanks again for taking time out of your very busy schedule to talk with me.
It's great to be here.
So as I noted in the introduction, Jody is the Senior Vice President for Policy and Political Affairs for a Human Rights Campaign. And so, Jody, before we start talking a little bit about failure and how you see that in your career now, I'm curious if you could just share a little bit about how you got to where you are now.
Chris and I did meet at Simpson College. I grew up in a really small town in Iowa called Walnut, Iowa. It was a fabulous place to grow up. Loved my hometown. And I came to Washington, D.C. over 25 years ago. And the first job that I had in Washington, D.C. was to actually be a nanny for the Harkin family. And I got connected to them from somebody that I worked with at Simpson College, and I also babysat for. So I became a nanny because of my great professional experience that just happened to be in the area of childcare is how I got connected to them. I thought I was going to live in D.C. just for a year or so and then come back to Iowa, hopefully go to law school and continue my life. And that year out here was extraordinarily life-changing for me and exposed me to politics and some opportunities that I am very grateful for. And, you know, what led me to what I do now is not been exactly a straight path. I worked on Capitol Hill for a number of years, but I would also go work on campaigns and work in nonprofits. And so I've been fortunate to have those different kinds of experiences and go back to Iowa to live for those efforts and be here in D.C. and experience those things. So I am a believer in our system of democracy. I'm a believer that we can make change in this country, and I find that to be very motivational, and I also believe that we need to make some changes in our country. Hmm. So that's how I arrive at this job. So I know that's not exactly what you were looking for, but
I think in the midst of our conversation, I always encourage my guests to name drop away, and so as you talk about some of your previous experiences.
Away. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
But first, before we get into that, you've worked a lot in politics and campaigns in trying to influence legislators. And so particularly when it comes to failure, this is a very broad question, but how is failure perceived in politics and how is it used?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do think that failure, and it depends, you know, also it can be framed and defined in politics very quickly. But, you know, it's certainly a part of the political process. You know, how many people actually pass bills through the Congress and have them signed by a president? Not that many people actually, you know, lead those kinds of things. And when you run for election, there's always somebody, at least one person who loses, not, you know, perhaps more. And so as you think about the whole system, there are opportunities for failure, if you will, at many turns. You know, there was, you know, John Ossoff just ran for Congress in a district in Georgia. He's somebody I actually know, and he and I traveled together when I was with CARE doing work, and we traveled together in Rwanda, and I think it was the Democratic Republic of Congo. And, you know, I could see a bright future for him. He was a congressional staffer at the time. And, you know, you saw him, and he at some point decided to take that risk and, you know, didn't know until last night whether or not he was going to be successful or not. And so he was not successful in that bid. And yet, a lot more people now know John Ossoff, and he has opportunities, I think, to probably run for other things and do other things because of that, that he might not have had 6 months ago. And so in politics, it's a constant churn of who's successful right now or who's on top right now and who's finding a path. But then, you know, it really can churn fast. And so I think in terms of, you know, the industry, if you want to think of it like that, is there, you know, that can churn really fast. And somebody who's having a rough year 2 years ago now can be on the top of the moon. I mean, yeah. I would say the Vice President Mike Pence is an example of that, who was having some real struggles with his political career. And then until President Trump named him as his running mate.
Yeah. Well, it's also, and I don't know, and I don't know, anyone can really define how, if someone quote unquote fails and they still come out looking pretty good compared to somebody else. So, again, taking a page out of the last presidential election, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but it seems like Bernie Sanders, who lost in the primary, quote-unquote failed, still has such a strong reputation versus Hillary, who is probably still seen with some mixed reaction after the loss. Is that, would you say that's fair to say?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say, and I think that, you know, many years in the limelight versus not many years in the limelight also can have that effect. And I would say that, you know, she is somebody who's been under attack for a long time. And so, you know, those things do accumulate over time. And I think that's, you know, from my perspective, particularly true for women.
Yeah. How have you been able to talk to folks who fail in politics, either through a campaign or trying to get legislation passed? Have you found a couple tried and true things to kind of help them and get them through it?
Well, I mean, even in Iowa, I think there's a great example that many of the folks who run for Congress didn't win on the first time, had to run more than once. And so that was a lot of our history for a long time. And so I do think that there are some things like that, like, you know, just because you lost once doesn't mean you shouldn't keep trying. And I think that ability to be tenacious and persistent and really stay at something is a quality that is very helpful. And being very thin-skinned in politics is not so helpful. And I also, I think those things are true in life. And I think that, you know, it's, you know, working in the LGBTQ movement is, you know, there are days where you have to sort of do a gut check to make sure we're still making, you know, forward progress, because there are setbacks. And so, you know, if you understand where you're headed and what your goals are, it makes it a lot better. And I would also add that those folks who choose to run for office because they really do want to make change versus sometimes people run because they want the title or the recognition is, you know, that's a tougher thing to do, in my opinion. And so if the reason that you want to run is because of your own ego versus wanting to actually make positive change in people's lives, whether or not you're on one end of the political spectrum or not, setting that aside, is, you know, that is a better reason to do this. And then, you know, if you fail at that, you have a pretty good idea why you did it. And that cause can still be noble and can still be accomplished in other ways. If it's more ego driven, then, you know, you sometimes see how those things work out either way. And so I think that, you know, that's something to really consider, and that I've observed in politics is why is somebody running, and it really does matter why they're running.
Yeah, and I would imagine too, if it's totally ego driven, that just totally sets you up for a harder fall if you lose.
Yeah, I would say so, and I think you know, and I think sometimes you see this in legacies. It's like, why are you running? Like, are you running because it's been the family thing to do, or somebody else wants you to do it? Is it something you really want to do? And I think that's important too, to tease out, because it is not for the faint of heart. That is for sure, especially in this day and age when, you know, people can post, you know, not we say 140 characters, like now people aren't even using 140 characters. You know, when I was thinking about fail, like, you know, and now you put just like the whole fail is like, you know, used in lexicon. It's, you know, it's really something to think about that, you know, people don't even use all 140 characters to criticize somebody or to do something, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you mentioned, I mentioned earlier, of course, that you work for Human Rights Campaign, and you mentioned that the advocacy you work for LGBTQ folks, and for folks who know about Urban Village and have had a chance to read the book, you know, of for Urban Village, our support and radical welcome of LGBTQ folks too. And so I'm curious for you, as you work with LGBTQ folks, so many stories that I've heard is that more often than not, at some point in their life when they've come out, somebody has said to them, this is not the way it should be, or this is not the lifestyle you should live. And there's they can't take it very personally. Like, I have somehow failed because I have these attractions. So I'm wondering, in your own experience, if what stories have you heard and how do you respond to them?
Well, I do think that there are many stories that you hear of folks, and I certainly have heard personally of many people that I have known who have had difficulties somewhere along the way. I will also say that the stories of acceptance are also very strong. Mm-hmm. And even, you know, there's a football player, another football player who came out, and he played for the Patriots and he played for the Chiefs, and he, you know, was accepted by the Chiefs when he came out and really supported in that. And he was actually considering suicide. He thought he was going to play college football. Then when he got accepted into playing pro football, still very much in the closet. And he really thought he would, after that was all done, commit suicide because he couldn't see how he could live this life. And so you really do have folks. And I do think as a society, as a church community, as you're building, and as various communities that we build, it's so important to have to support people in the place that they are, on the journey they are on, in the ways that they need support.
Yeah, that story also makes me think about for parents, for children who tell their parents this news, and if the parent is not able to immediately welcome and affirm that internal tension that they might be feeling, there might be some parents who feel like, what did I do wrong in my own parenting? And also there might be some internal thinking of, I should be able to just immediately hug them and say, I love you. And no matter what, I'm here for you. And for some parents who can't do that, then they may also be wondering, why can't I do that? So as you noted, for some, it takes time.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, one of the things that are underlying, you know, your discussion about, you know, to fail means you have tried things and you have exposed yourself to things that you're attempting. And I think that, you know, as you think about people being vulnerable in that, really is one of the underlying characteristics of, you know, striving for goals or attempting things or putting yourself in a position where you're risking, where you might fail, etc. And I do think that you know, parenting is one of those places where you worry all the time. It's one of the most humbling things that I've ever done in my life is to parent, you know, my kids, and you're always wondering if what you're doing is right or not. But you know, you're human, and the moment that you forget that and you forget your own vulnerability, that modeling that it's okay to make mistakes, but it's also okay to acknowledge them. And I think, you know, in terms of thinking about parents and how to handle this, I think instead of trying to be the perfect parent around these sorts of things, be the human parent, right? Be the human who's saying, like, the person who's like, look, I'm not exactly sure what this all means, but I know I love you. And I know I want to be in your life and I don't want to support you. So if you can help me understand what some of this might mean, you know, I might need a little bit of that. I think it's okay to be vulnerable. And I think it's okay to share that vulnerability, because that's what your kid is doing with you, is being vulnerable. And, you know, but I would say my parents perhaps are of a generation that they don't come into that in terms of, well, it's okay to be vulnerable. It's, that's not really, you know, how they were brought up. But I think that's, you know, that's one of the keys in terms of, getting through this and having a relationship.
Have you found that your own kids receive your vulnerability well?
You know, they do. So one of the things that, I have attempted to teach them, and I try to do it myself, is, you know, I mess up, right? I might yell, I might do something. And so we have this way that we apologize, where, you know, I'll say, I'm sorry that I yelled or used a bad word. And I'm going to try not to do that in the future. And so that's what I'm going to, you know, that's my commitment to you. But even in acknowledging that you messed up as a parent, like the first couple of times I did this, I think they were waiting for, like, and therefore what? Like, what's going to happen now? And so now they're a little more used to it. But, you know, it's, you know, I think it's healthy. And so I'm trying to practice that myself and not sort of present myself as like, oh, I'm perfect. And even if it's okay for me to make a mistake, I don't have to acknowledge it or whatever, because I want them to have that space and ability to do it. So they receive it pretty well. But it's, you know, the first couple of times it was a little, they thought I had maybe lost my mind.
It must be, I totally am with you on sharing vulnerability, and particularly in vulnerability in parenting. But when you work in politics, what my perception is, there isn't a whole lot of vulnerability in Washington, D.C. Is that accurate, or is it?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, people often don't want to show vulnerability in terms of positioning around something or not. But I do think if you look, like, look, when people really do make big mistakes in politics, and they can try to sort of dance around it for a while or whatever, but at some point, if they don't sort of fess up that maybe they kind of made a mistake or something, like, oftentimes that can continue to backfire. And so, you know, I think that it can be used in politics. Maybe some people use it as kind of their last resort when they maybe should use it prior to that. But, you know, look, there are, you know, I think that working in politics and what goes on, it's like, it's, of course, there isn't a lot of room for sort of, you know, the vulnerability or mistakes or whatever you want to say. And yet they happen all the time.
Right.
Right. It's not like they're not happening. They're happening all the time. How you handle them, what you do around them, and how, you know, what is your goal? What are you trying to get accomplished really does matter. And, you know, people get, can get pretty wrapped around the whole partisanship piece, in this town, and blame people for things and this and that back and forth. But at the end of the day, the people who are actually accomplishing things, they at some point have to be a little vulnerable to figure out where's the path to get it accomplished.
Yeah.
You know, if they're just like, oh, I'm just charging ahead, you'll get some people to come along. But the better way to do it is to actually have some amount of vulnerability.
Yeah. This is maybe somewhat related, but I'm curious for you that you said earlier in the podcast that you still believe in democracy, you still believe in in the work that you do and that others do. So I guess my question is, how do you keep that attitude? How do, when so many people, especially more and more, are becoming cynical and they just like, I can't deal with it anymore. And so they check out, what drives you to continue to have that, I guess, hope, for lack of a better word, and keeps you going and takes you to the office every day?
Yeah. Well, I think in great part, you know, as I came into politics and worked for Senator Tom Harkin of Iowa, as I was getting started, they were just President Bush, the first Bush, was just signing the Americans with Disabilities Act. And Tom Harkin and Bob Dole were two of the key folks in the Senate who worked in bipartisan fashion on that bill. And I was able to see up close how hard the disability community had worked on that and had lobbied for it and advocated for it, and then how over time so many things in that bill really impacted people's day-to-day lives, right? Being able to live independently, just, you know, in schools and having curbs cut out so wheelchairs can come up. I mean, just all these things that were part of the Americans with Disabilities Act. And so I was able to see how a movement, how laws could actually impact people's day-to-day lives up close and personal. That's one example. But, you know, as I look at in our country, how much progress we've made on LGBTQ issues and some of the work I'm doing today, we have made so much progress. And yet, our community doesn't have full protections, full legal protections in this country. And so, you know, as we had marriage equality 2 years ago with the Obergefell decision in the Supreme Court, you know, we got marriage equality, but that doesn't protect you in every state in your job. That doesn't protect you in every state for your getting your apartment, credit, jury service. And so there are all these places where people who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender do not have basic protections. And as I look at this, I'm very motivated by people having opportunities to reach their own American dream, right? And so, you know, I feel like this is an area where people aren't allowed to do that. And as I think about it, I think that's very unfair. And I have been motivated by things that are unfair since I was a little kid. Like I was the kid who like popped the bully in the nose and then ran for the school door when he was going to come beat me up, right? He was picking on a kid and I interrupted him and I was like, don't you dare, you know, touch him. And then he's like, well, what do you want me to do? And it turns out I just pop him. And then I run as fast as I can up to the school because I knew I was going to get beat up. And so, you know, that unfairness, that sense of justice has been something that's motivated me for my life. And so, you know, I think that for me, this is a natural place to be and do this work. And I've been able to talk to people all over the country and some around the globe who face discrimination in their day-to-day lives. And so, you know, I feel like I'm well positioned to help in the movement as one of the people working in the movement at this time. And I honestly, I can see a path to us making progress. And so I think both the need as well as the opportunity to make progress are very motivational for me. And so, you know, I feel like I also have the luxury, if it's okay to say it in that way, at this point in my career, I get to kind of pick the things I want to do. And this is something that certainly has affected me personally, but also, you know, I see the community, I see young people, I see folks out there who I want them to have live the fullest life that they can live. And I think this is one of the ways I can impact things.
Yeah. Well, you've already shared a couple of your kind of own personal stories. I'm wondering if are there any other stories you wanted to share about any failings that you had in other parts of your life?
Do you ever find it awkward that you're asking this question, Chris? You know, failing. I think, you know, the challenge, and this is a longer conversation. I'll tell you, that in the grander scheme, you know, I worked on Hillary Clinton's first campaign, and you know, I have off and on worked on women's campaigns going back 20 years, and I ran a women's race. Sheila McGuire Riggs ran for Congress in Iowa's Northwest District, which had been held by Fred Grandy, and he ran against Terry Branstad way back in the day. And Fred Grandy was Gopher on Love Boat, for those of us who are of that generation who watched it religiously. So that district is open. So, you know, we ran that race. It was really tough. We drove all over that district. We won a primary. We weren't supposed to win, but that was not a good year to run. That was 1994. It was a tough year. That was the contract on America that year. Yeah. Anyway, so I flash forward a number of years, and the nexus of Hillary Clinton running and my interest in seeing women in leadership roles in our country to the highest levels, it was awfully hard to resist when she asked me to go back to Iowa and be her first staffer on the ground in Iowa in the first campaign, and so I did that. I have to say that in terms of my personal career, just feeling like we should have won that campaign, you know, could have won that campaign if we'd done some things differently and run more local state-based races as opposed to a national campaign, you know, it might have, you know, changed things. But it's certainly one of the more difficult things for me. And I think we, therefore, you know, I know my part in that. I wish that would have happened differently and we would have done some things differently. But I'll tell you my very first trip with her, and as you can imagine, and no one will ever change my mind, I think she is an extraordinary public servant. And I've been around a number of elected officials, and her intellect, her commitment to people, in my mind, honestly, is hardly challenged. And her ability to get things done combined with those things would have made her an extraordinary president, made her a really good senator. And I got to work up there with her when I was Tom Harkin's chief of staff. But it made her, I still think to this day, she's one of the most extraordinary public servants I've ever worked for. And I also worked for her husband, just to be clear. But the very first trip to Iowa, I literally was not even on paid staff yet. And they hired me, and they said, and I was going to start in a couple weeks, had to finish up what I was doing. They said, but, well, she's going to go ahead and announce this coming weekend, and then her first trip the following weekend is to Iowa. Would you go with her? And I'm like, well, of course I'm going to go with her. I wasn't on paid staff. There was no paid staff. And I was feeling like we put these briefings together. I literally asked various friends of mine to write some of these briefings because we were going to all different towns. So I'm asking these friends, I'm like, will you write this? You know, I know you're supporting Hillary, or you likely will, but will you write this briefing and do all this? So I had all these people doing this, and I put this briefing book together, and I was like, I can't believe, like, I've cobbled this briefing book together, like, and here we are, and we're sitting in the car, and we're driving to, like, the first event, and I said, you know, I just want you to know that, you know, that the quality of all of this and the time I spent on this will be much higher, like, on your next trip. And I said, you know, I'm not really on staff yet, but I said, you know, so, but here are all your briefings. And we started going over them. And here is this woman who the week before on, you know, on social media announced that she's running for president of the United States. And I hand her this briefing book, and she looks at me and she goes, don't worry, Jody, it's all going to be okay. And I was like, I'm thinking, you know, but here I'm serving up like this thing. I'm thinking I'm already screwing this up, right? And like, and she's assuring me in the car, like, no, Jody, it's going to be okay, and we're going to do all right on this trip. And I was like, okay, all right, I'm ready. So, you know, and she did a great job on the trip. But I just remember thinking, oh my gosh, I'm already screwing this all up.
That also really speaks to the necessity of having key people in your life, no matter who you are, what you do for a living, to have somebody who can say it's going to be okay. Is invaluable. And sometimes people will say to clergy when they say, you know, when you are with someone who's going through a loss or anxiety or whatever, like, how do you know what to say or how to respond? And more often than not, it's just simply just A, being there, and B, saying something like, it's going to be okay. That's such a valuable thing.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, you know, that I want to just close out, unless there are other things you want to ask, Chris, is just, you know, as I thought about your book, you know, I have to say I've been pretty good about challenging myself in life at different times, but, you know, I'm going to finish your book, 'cause I'm not quite finished. But, you know, I think you also renewed in me an idea that, you know, what are some of the ways that I should keep challenging myself? And because I don't really fear failure all that much at this point in my life. I've done a fair number of things. But I also realized by reading this, you can really continue to make those challenges to yourself. And you also can fall back into the patterns of, even if you aren't kind of working from places of fear as you make decisions, you can go back into a complacency. And certainly, you know, I think this last presidential election, thinking from a political perspective, I think woke a lot of people up. Some I perhaps agree more with than others, but, you know, woke a lot of people up. And as I said, I'm still a believer in democracy. And I think coming from a place like Iowa, I do think that a lot of those things are instilled there with the, you know, high rates of folks who participate in community and in voting and everything. But it's also a belief in this country. And I think that, you know, that you know, do I believe in the institutions, every institution at the same level and all the people? No, but I definitely believe in this democracy in terms of it still being vibrant. But it is more vibrant when we all figure out how to continue to engage. And I like the idea of thinking about, you know, failing boldly while we try to keep engaging and doing these things. So I appreciate your inspiration as well as your the intrigue of getting through your book.
Well, I appreciate that, Jody. And sure, it's a good note to end on with an endorsement. I'll take it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
But I appreciate you, Jody. And I know people who will listen to this will use it as inspiration, especially on days when they are feeling like it's hard to be resilient and to keep on going and the necessity of making forward progress. So I'm grateful for the work that you do.
Appreciate it, Chris. And keep up the good work out there.
Thanks, Jody. That's this week's episode. Thanks again to Jody Winteroff for speaking with me. You can learn more about Human Rights Campaign and the work that Jody and they do by going to hrc.org. I hope you will subscribe to this podcast as my next conversation is with Bishop Robert Schnese of the United Methodist Church. To learn more about my book and the ministry I'm a part of, you can go to christiankuhn.com. Thanks again for listening. I'm Christian Kuhn, author of the book Failing Boldly and pastor of Urban Village Church in Chicago. My guest for this week's...